again, welcome to Blind Line. It's the only internet talk show exclusively for the blind and visually impaired. My name is Jonathan Mosen. We're here every week with fascinating talk, a lot of which is, of course, provided by you. But generally, we have an interview before we open the buddy phone connection and the telephone line, and shortly we'll be speaking with Glenn Gordon. He's the development manager for HenderJoyce. They've just released JAWS for Windows version 3.5. Now, some of us already have that. It's available on the internet to those with a software maintenance agreement, and I hear that the discs are going out very shortly to those who choose not to or can't download the program that way. So we'll find out what's new in version 3.5 of JAWS for Windows. Also find out a little bit about how you might be able to influence future development of JAWS for Windows in a constructive kind of way. And also, we'll answer some questions that have been submitted by JFW users over the last few days, so that's coming up very shortly. After that, of course, it's your opportunity to speak on any issue you want. You may want to comment on what you think of JAWS for Windows 3.5 if you've given it a go. How's the screen reader industry looking at the moment? Who's leading? Who needs to catch up? We can look at all those things and anything else that you want to raise. It's been a pretty interesting week, so no doubt there'll be some issues on your mind that you might want to talk about. We'll open the telephone line if you want to make a call to New Zealand, and we also have the Buddy Phone connection open after the interview. You can download that Buddy Phone software by going to the acbradio.org site. In fact, you may even be able to do that while you listen to the Glenn Gordon interview if you have a sufficiently robust connection to do that. Just before we get into the interview, a reminder that we are always looking for blind and visually impaired people to produce programming on ACB Radio. It doesn't have to be specifically about blindness. It may be just a music show or something that you want to put together. A bit of humour, who knows? Another talk show. We're certainly open to any suggestions. If you want to find out more about what's involved in doing that, then please drop us an email. support@acbradio.org is the address. That's support@acbradio.org. But I gave Glenn Gordon, the development manager of HenderJoyce, a call at his office in Florida a couple of days ago and recorded the following interview, mainly to do with the release of JAWS for Windows 3.5. Let's start, Glenn, by discussing JFW 3.5, just recently released, and I think it's only right and proper for me to give you a chance to brag about some of the new features that we can find in the latest release of JFW.
Sounds great. I'm delighted to be able to do that. We've actually built on a couple of different things. We built on our Internet Explorer support, which we started out with in 3.3.1. One of the things we added in 3.5 was many options. People were saying, I don't want the Internet to be served to me in a particular fashion. I want to control how much or how little information I get. So people can set things like whether or not if a link is actually contained in an image map, you're told that it's in the image map. Or if a link is to a file on an FTP site, whether or not you really want that information as to whether or not it's an FTP link versus just a link. We also let you set how many characters need to be found consecutively to determine a block of text as opposed to links or other buttons that might be pressed, so you can easily jump from one item to the next.
That's a handy feature, just interrupting you there, isn't it? And I know I've been doing some training with clients over the last couple of weeks with this, and so many people have been put off by the verbiage that's at the top of every web page, the constant same links, the feeling that people are going around in a circle, and now with the press of this keystroke, it probably works, I would say, you know, 95 times out of 100 to take you straight to the meaningful text.
The other thing we've actually added is looking at the last page you were on and comparing it to the current page you're on. And there's an option now to skip the text that automatically is duplicated. So in some cases, if the tops of two pages are identical, we'll just naturally start reading at the point where the text differs.
Right. And that's something you can turn off if you're a purist and you don't really want JAWS fiddling with what the page is like or where it takes you. You can start from the top if that's what you want to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there are a bunch of other Internet options, not to give them short shrift. One of the new Internet features we've added is the ability to navigate through tables. And so you can move left, right, up or down and get either the row or the column headings as you're navigating through a table on a web page. And that's something that we've built upon conceptually from our support in Word. For, I think, a couple of versions, we've allowed navigating tables in Word 97 and Office 2000 documents. We've extended some of that support, also added the table navigation to WordPerfect. And speaking of Word, we have added a couple of nifty features for detecting whether or not grammar is incorrect or you have spelling errors. As you're reading through a document, you'll actually be told there's an error online, either in spelling or grammatically speaking. Also true in WordPerfect, and we've added a great deal of support for forms that sometimes are embedded in Word documents. So even if the forms aren't designed terribly well, you still have the opportunity to, in many cases, get the proper prompts as you're tabbing through them.
One of the things I notice as someone who does a lot of HTML work in Word 97, of all things, is that it's also detecting hyperlinks in all kinds of fields that it never used to before.
Thank you for the prompting there. Actually, Joe Stephen is responsible for a lot of this work. And he has become just a maniac with detecting all these nifty features in Word and being able to expose them through JFW. So I may miss some of these in discussing the features. So we've added a bunch of new scripts, Grolier's Multimedia Encyclopedia, and several others as well, which I don't have in front of me specifically.
Yeah, the Audible Manager is something that a number of the people who listen to this program may be interested in, but I understand that the product that JFW 3.5 is supporting is still in beta at the Audible level. Is that correct?
Do not quote me on this. I do not know. I know that they were working with us to make sure that they had made some changes in their plugin so that it would talk better with JFW and other screen readers. And I don't know what the status of that is in terms of being out on the open market.
Mm. And you have some interface changes to JFW 3.5, nothing too significant, but there are a few changes. For instance, I noticed the restriction on JAWS cursor feature when you turn the JAWS cursor on has been modified a little.
You're a great coach. I appreciate this. Yes, this is something that people have been asking for a long time. It used to be the JAWS cursor, which essentially is the mouse, or the invisible cursor, which is invisible, couldn't leave the rectangle of the current window, or at least of the current application window. And now we've added the ability to let the JAWS cursor or the invisible cursor roam the entire screen. And people have been asking for that for a while, and figured it was time we actually make it happen.
Now, a little bird called Eric dropped me an email to prompt me about the fact that you're going to be doing a presentation at CSUN about JFW with PowerPoint, and this is something that comes up quite regularly. People want to be able to put together these impressive visual presentations because it's a site that we'll be living in, obviously. Has PowerPoint support for JFW been enhanced, and can you perhaps talk a little about how JFW works with PowerPoint and how a blind person can use such a visual authoring tool?
I can, and let me stress that one of the reasons why I'm so excited about doing this presentation at CSUN is not just because you can drop information onto slides, but because we're really going to try to present some information in terms of how do you conceptually lay out a slideshow. I mean, being a blind person, it doesn't help me to know that, well, you could have 6 bullets on this slide or 3 bullets on this slide and 3 on the next one, and you can have them fading in or you can have them all appear at once. When I'm given choices in areas like this, I find that this just causes me to sort of go into neutral, and I can't quite figure out what the right decision is because I have no idea what the visual impact is going to be. So, fortunately, this presentation is not being designed by a blind person in terms of what's aesthetically present and pleasant. So we're going to sort of mix the aesthetics and what makes sense with really navigating PowerPoint in JFW. And from the navigation standpoint, there really are two levels. One is simply playing back a slideshow. So if someone's designed the slideshow on your behalf, you can go through and hit the space bar and go from slide to slide to slide and potentially have an earphone in your ear and be prompted either with the title of the slide or if you're interested in listening to a lot while you're talking with the entire text of the slide. So that feature is available, and then we have a variety of informational features so that when you're designing a slideshow, when you're putting information on the slide, you can figure out what's there, the order that the pieces are there, and how all the pieces are going to fit together. We had some of this support, I believe, in 3.3.1. We've made some enhancements for the 3.5 release as well.
That's a fascinating thing. Yes, so you see, so it's not just screen access in this case, isn't it? It's actually a blind person getting to grips with what's aesthetically pleasing, what works in a presentation.
That's the idea. I'll let you know on March, whatever the day after the presentation is, whether we met the mark. But that's the intent.
That's interesting. Now, I want to spend some time trying to clarify something that's confusing the heck out of a lot of people, and this relates to the support that JFW 3.5 now has for the Java Access Bridge. And I guess we should start from square one and just ask, what is the Java Access Bridge, and do we need it?
Yes, I think we need it, and I think I would like to play Peter Korn. Peter Korn is the man primarily responsible at Sun for making the Access Bridge a reality. And Peter has done some great letters to the JFW mailing list and other places as well, really trying to clarify the differences between Java and JavaScript and Microsoft Java versus Sun's Java. And would this be worth spending a minute and a half trying to do? I think I can get it in 90 seconds.
Look, spend as much time as you want, because I think when a lot of people hear Java, they immediately think of that stuff on web pages, and that's not really what we're dealing with here, is it?
Sometimes. Let's start out with JavaScript, because I think that's probably the simplest and the one that sort of covers the smallest amount of ground in terms of getting your hands around it conceptually. JavaScript is nothing more than a scripting language for putting things on web pages based upon some events. So, for instance, some web pages will have a lot of information on them, but certain information will be hidden until you click a button. And then when you click a button, it's a piece of JavaScript that says, I think I'll hide some of the information that's currently here and put new information up on the screen. It's similar to Visual Basic in terms of what its functionality is. It has some of the syntax of Java, but it's not really the entire Java ball of wax. It's a restricted portion of Java. And for the most part, unless the JavaScript is rendering graphics, JFW can cope with that fairly well in Internet Explorer, simply because what the JavaScript is usually doing is either changing the content of the current page or launching another page. And as a user, you probably don't even know that JavaScript is what's doing it in most cases. Okay, so that really has nothing to do with what Sun is about and the Access Bridge. When you leave the topic of JavaScript, then you hit the topic of Java. And Java is simply a development and programming environment, similar to Basic or C++ or COBOL or pick your favorite language. Java can run in a couple of different ways. It can run as applets, which are little programs that suddenly appear in the middle of a web page. And if someone's using Internet Explorer, I know Game Day Live on the, I think it's NFL.org page in the United States, on Sundays when football games are on, and I'm told football is on Sundays, that's not my favorite sport, you can bring up this particular page, and there's a little Java applet that will put up stats consistently and continuously. And there's no real easy way to get at those Java applets from within Internet Explorer, because that's Microsoft's implementation of Java. And Microsoft's implementation of Java is different than Sun's. Sun's implementation of Java, now we get to the good stuff, supports something now called Swing, which is the newest technology for creating Java applets and applications. And through the Java Access Bridge, we can access information contained in these applications or applets designed with Swing and present them in the same fashion as you would information in the standard Windows application. The configuration is not for the faint of heart yet. It gradually will get easier. Sun has put out an installer to make it easier to install the Access Bridge and the necessary pieces for using it with JFW and or other tools as they become available. But once it's up and running, those who have worked with it and tried it have been very impressed with the information that's being revealed. And we're just getting going. I mean, we see this as being particularly useful and important in corporate organizations. Many companies are using Java applications more and more in-house for developing applications for serving their employee base. And that's where we see a lot of the initial success and a usefulness of this is going to be. So obviously, as time goes by, more people will take it over.
The Sun Java applications, they can be web-based or not, is that correct?
They can be. If you do it on the web, and in fact, you can actually do it on the web and view them and use them through Internet Explorer, but you need a special plugin from Sun to do that.
Okay. So it's probably not going to make a huge difference to some of these Java applets that we see all over the place that because that's Microsoft Java.
Not yet. Hmm. Now, I mean, there are a couple of things that potentially are happening. One is that Microsoft will gradually move to Java 2, which is the version of Java from Sun that supports Swing. And as Swing becomes more popular and Microsoft embraces it, then I think there's a good chance that a lot of this technology can get retrofitted into their environment.
Can you, off the top of your head, give us some examples of, once people have got this stuff installed, and I'll come back to that in a second, where can people go to try to make sure this thing is working and see exactly what it does?
You've caught me off guard. I hate to send people on sort of a search and destroy expedition, but if you go to java.sun.com, eventually you should be able to... Is it Java or JavaSoft? See, I'm getting myself in trouble. There is somewhere a long list of Java applications that are freely available and that people can work with and try. We've worked with some of them. There are some that come along with the Java, what's called the Java SDK, the System Development Kit, and they have some applications just for sort of, you know, proof of concept that has all the various controls, tree views and list views and buttons and list boxes and so forth. But the real applications are listed at this site that I can't think of at the moment, and they range from web browsers to mail clients. And they probably work with differing degrees of effectiveness depending upon how well they actually implemented the Swing classes.
And then if you don't have this Java Access Bridge installed, what happens when you run one of these applications? You just get nothing?
Well, basically, focus may or may not move into the application. For instance, if you run an application and your position is in edit to start with, then most likely if you were to do a say line or say the current word, you would hear that piece of information. But you wouldn't have much information conceptually about how this screen was organized. So if you had a combination of a list box and several buttons and a couple of edits and a list view, they would all appear to be just one big blob of text. That's how it is with Java 1.1 and Sun. As of 1.2, the way that Sun is putting text on the screen no longer uses the standard methods employed by Windows. So without the Access Bridge, when you're using Java 1.2, you would see nothing. You'd basically see blank.
Is the Access Bridge on the JFW 3.5 CD?
It is not, actually. We decided that it would probably be easier for people to get it based upon what Sun had, and that way they would be sure to have the latest updates as it changed and evolved.
Right.
The portions are sort of built into JFW to allow us to link into it.
Yes.
But the Access Bridge itself comes from Sun.
Based on the volume of traffic on the JFW list about people going around the rather large Sun site looking for this stuff, is there any chance that there will be direct links to the appropriate files on the HJ website?
Certainly seems reasonable. Obviously, we'll check with the folks at Sun and make sure we can do that and see if there's any problems at our end. I was told I should never promise anything for fear that I am dispensable.
But it's not beyond the realms of possibility that that...
No, not at all.
Before we go on to looking at what you might be able to tell us about the future of JFW, there are a few issues that some listeners have phoned in perhaps to do with things that, are not there yet that might be. One of the issues that came up a couple of times from listeners was that when JAWS 3.0 released, a whole lot of managers, such as the frame manager and the Windows manager, etc., that it was said that that was the precursor to giving us a macro recorder, like the one that we had in JAWS for DOS. Is that still in the works?
It is in the works. I cannot give you an exact time frame, but that has continued to be a request. And although you can basically create a real poor man's or poor person's macro recorder currently using the script language, we're trying to do something a little bit more sophisticated.
Right. So it's coming, but we're not quite sure when at this stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to pretend that I'm about to be in primary season.
Yes,
and
yes.
Probably be a little evasive about dates on all of these things.
Why? What about JAWS for Windows and the Control Alt Delete dialogue? This is something that comes up quite a bit on the lists that I'm on. People want to see access to this dialogue and make the comment that there are other screen readers offering it. Is that a concern for HJ at this point to get that access?
It is a concern, and not to tip anybody else's hand. I will say that when that dialogue comes up, everything else in Windows pretty much stops. Microsoft went to great lengths to make sure that that dialogue would come up in all cases, and any program that's running basically is frozen. And because we are a true 32-bit application, there really is no easy way to keep our application running when that dialogue comes up. And I believe what some of the other programs are doing, because they have more as 16-bit components than we do, they're actually able to do their speaking as the information is being written to the screen. And so you can't necessarily navigate, you know, by word or character as you can when that dialogue isn't up, but it is giving you information. But because of our architecture being a sort of a completely a 32-bit application now, with all of our speech being spoken as it is, it's requiring a little bit more R&D to try to come out with an approach to make this work well.
But if a bit of 16-bit code gives blind people the kind of access that they want to Windows, isn't it worth going that way?
Yes and no. The problem is that everything we have that's doing the speaking is structured in such a way that it's not possible currently for our design to have that information being sent up top.
Mm.
So I am by no means saying that we're giving up on this issue, but I wanted to at least paint a little bit of a picture to indicate that we're not just trying to be intransigent. Our design and how we're currently interacting with Windows isn't making that possible. The trade-off is that we're able to do a lot of things that are difficult, if more of your app is 16-bit code.
You've made some significant improvements over the last couple of releases to Braille support, and now you have grade 2 output and all kinds of things. I got a comment from a European listener who said that in his opinion the Braille support still isn't quite there to the extent that you could use JFW with Braille and totally without speech. Do you think that's a fair comment, or are you quite satisfied with Braille support in JFW at present?
I don't think we're ever satisfied. I mean, that's complacency is the sign that you're going to be yesterday's news. We are trying to continue to make improvements, and every release we try to improve lots of different areas, and Braille is key amongst them. One of the things that I think and others have agreed we have made great strides in the last couple of versions is what we call structured mode in Braille, where if there's information from lots of different places on the screen, we can consolidate it all onto one line. And probably the best example of this is a dialog box with multiple pages and perhaps a group box and some radio buttons in that group box. What we can actually put up on a single line of the Braille display, because most Braille displays in the price range of those of us who have them are only single line, we can put the name of the dialogue, followed by the name of the page, followed by the name of the group box, followed by the name of the radio button, all at once, and all possible to scan through, you know, going left and right. And that's something that, especially when you're dealing with complicated screens and areas where otherwise you might be required to go up, down, left, and right to see all the information, certainly I think has given us some nice advantages. And secondly, I think starting with, it was 3.3 now, we allow the Braille display to move independently of the active cursor. So even if the PC cursor is on, essentially the blinking carrot, you can move the Braille display away from where that carrot is, explore around the screen or around the current window, and not have to switch from one cursor to the next. So in that regard, I think we've simplified some of these processes. But are we satisfied? No, never are. But you got to release a product, you know, now and then. So sales tell us.
Yes, there are always those tensions there. I also had a question about the issue of whether JFW 3.5 is any more tolerant of larger fonts. There seems to be an issue I'm not totally familiar with relating to putting, say, an email message from Outlook in a really large font and finding that perhaps you might not get speech. Are you conscious of that issue, and is it being addressed in, or has it been addressed in 3.5?
Well, I'm not sure as to whether or not what I'm about to say applies to Outlook, because I don't usually use 40 and 50 point fonts in Outlook. I know that in the case of many programs, as the font gets bigger, so does the blinking carrot. And in the case of Microsoft Word, for instance, as the font gets larger, the carrot does too, and we've simply made the allowable size of a line that we consider to be a carrot to be larger, and then we're able to read these larger fonts. And that may very well be the solution for Outlook as well.
Okay, so it may in fact be that this isn't a JAWS issue as such. It might just be a tech support issue for configuring JAWS in a different way.
I hope so, and if not, I'm sure after the interview, a bunch of folks will set us straight, and that we'll be able to address this as time progresses.
You made the comment just a little while ago that you've got to release a product every so often. That means that there will be some issues that you know exist that don't quite get resolved, probably to your satisfaction. How do you actually prioritize those issues that you do decide to work on before releasing the next version and those which can afford to wait?
A couple of different ways. It's becoming more formal. Long ago, many years back, it essentially was, you know, who wrote the most often, who was the most vocal, and how many people actually sent us mail on the same topic within, you know, a short period of time. We've tried to make this a little bit more organized and scientific as of the last couple of releases, where we really do gather the suggestions and tally them and trying to get some idea of what people are concerned about and how much of a bang for the buck we're going to get in terms of either adding a feature or making a fix. Some things are really easy to do and they benefit a lot of people. And at the other end of the spectrum, it takes a really, really long time, and it may help one person on alternate Tuesdays. And so that, as much as anything, is really what we're trying to deal with, is how can we benefit the most people with the resources we have available. Just by way of sort of segueing into our new versions, we're having, I'd call it a retreat, but it's actually going to be at the company offices this weekend. So I don't know whether you call it a retreat when it meets on the weekends. But a couple of our longtime beta testers are joining us. Several of us in the company will be there as well, going through the long list of suggestions that continues to come in and trying to come up with some priorities for the upcoming releases.
Talking of resources that are available, how many people do you have working on the actual writing of the JAWS for Windows code?
It's sort of divided, actually, because we have a bunch of people who are taking what exists in the JAWS code and taking applications that might work reasonably well out of the box and really trying to enhance them by writing scripts for those applications. I always lose track. That's three or four people, and probably another three or four people, those of us who are actually into the nitty-gritty code, writing the guts, writing the innards of it. And several of us, might I add, are blind. I'll do a little digression here. stop me if it gets to be too much. I got involved with Hannah Joyce back mid-90s, 1994, when I was realizing that although I had a great background in Unix and knew lots about it, the world was moving to Microsoft Windows, and thus far there weren't very many screen readers, and really had a great passion and a great desire to become involved in crafting the technology that would allow me to work. And that is the sort of people we've been trying to attract to our, you know, all throughout the company, but I'll speak myopically of the development group. So several people who are blind who are both writing the low-level code and scripters as well.
Yes. Do you think that you've been successful in unlocking the power of scripting for the average user, or is it still something that you think needs to be unlocked a little more so that the average user can get the power out of JFW that does exist within that language?
It's evolutionary. I think when we first came out with 3.0, those who were really, really eager and who understood a little bit about programming were able to pretty much, you know, get into it and accomplish some tasks. Ken Gould has written and now revised our script manual, which is really a tutorial introduction to writing scripts in JFW, plus a reference section of the most useful algorithms and functions and scripts that can be called. So we're trying to use that as a guide for people who may never have done programming before, but have an interest, who are JFW users, and are able to either modify existing scripts or write scripts, perhaps simple ones initially, for customizing some of their favorite applications, and then gradually moving forward and making those scripts more complicated and involved for themselves. One of the things that's really amazed all of us is the great amount of resources, large amount of resources, available, users helping users. The JFW scripting mailing list, and I guess the general JFW mailing list as well, often has discussions about what's the best way of accomplishing something, and people have come up with lots of ideas that we haven't even thought of in-house. So it seems very much like a group process, and that's something that we're really pleased with.
Of course, Hannah Joyce doesn't run those lists, but I noticed that in recent times there has been an increased presence from some of your team on those lists. Is that in response to a feeling that HJ was being a little bit aloof prior to that?
I don't think it was a feeling we were being aloof. I think we've finally been able to structure things so that we can actually give people some time and allow them as part of their ongoing tasks, you know, to look at the lists and monitor it. And I think we've realized that the more feedback we get from people, the more it helps us to enhance things and perhaps clarify information that might otherwise have been confused.
And the advent of the public beta programs has been widely welcomed as well.
It's always a difficult thing because, on the one hand, you don't want to put a beta out too soon because, you know, by nature, beta software often has problems. That's why we call it beta. We've never done a beta program that, you know, hasn't needed a couple of revisions before we've gone to final release. On the other hand, we don't want to do it too late because we want people to be able to try some of the functionality and let us know the things that work and the things that they might think need a few revisions. So it's one more thing that really helps us to understand how people are using the program, what they're finding to be easy to deal with, what they may find needs either some more clarification or some reworking. So hopefully, if it works as designed, it allows us to be a little more responsive and do it more quickly.
Is Hannah Joyce committed to the Everlock copy protection scheme for the future of JFW?
If I answer this question literally, you will have the wrong idea. The literal question is no, because we actually have abandoned Everlock in favor of something else. However, once you pass that semantic question, at least for the time being, we're sticking with it. For a couple of reasons. One, because we're distributing the software synthesizer with it, which obviously the folks at Eloquence are not necessarily eager to have their synthesizer sent all over the globe unreasonably. Secondly, we find it's a pretty effective way of allowing people to download software and get it if they qualify for an SMA, the software maintenance agreement we have in place, and not be able to use it if they don't. And we haven't come up with any good schemes to this point that give us the same flexibility as the authorization system we now have in place.
Mm. So it's not EverLock anymore?
It's not. There still are some historic copies of EverLock out there, so if people got it a long time ago, the EverLock continues to move forward, but we've moved away from it. For one of many reasons, the version that we were using isn't compatible with some of the faster new processors out, and the new version of EverLock isn't backwardly compatible with the old version of EverLock. Mm. So,
I wonder whether you've done, or whether Hinder Joyce has done any kind of analysis as to the cost-benefit of continuing with copy protection, in the sense that it must generate a significant amount of technical support traffic, and also, you know, a bit of bad will from people who've had problems using a disk defragmenter or something that's lost them a key. Yet it's obviously still perceived by HJ to be something worth continuing with.
Well, you know, it's a trade-off, and I certainly don't make policy issues or policy decisions here. We've given it a lot of thought, and we continue to give it a lot of thought. And depending upon what opportunities come our way as time progresses and how we feel like those fit into our strategies, we're certainly not opposed to visiting the issue periodically. But thus far, for some of the reasons I've mentioned and probably a couple that I can't think of at the moment, it seems to give us the most flexibility without allowing people to just sort of do a wholesale or allowing the possibility of, you know, one or two people deciding that they're going to do a wholesale distribution network.
Yeah. And JFW is Windows 2000 ready?
It is Windows 2000 ready, ready, willing, and able. We actually have a patch coming out when Windows 2000 comes out, so just working on a couple of those last things connected with the final release of Windows 2000.
I realize that this is a kind of a sales angle, a sales question here, but do you happen to know about the issues for people who want to upgrade from the JFW that works with 98 to 2000, and also Windows NT to the 2000 version?
Well, I can answer one question, I can't answer the other. The NT and the 2000 we're treating as the same product.
Right.
So if you're authorized for NT, you're authorized for 2000. There is an upgrade process and cost from going from 98 to 2000 or from 98 to NT. Clearly, that's the same number, and I don't have that number in front of me. So I would recommend people either call us, which is 800-336-5658, or go to one of the few two-letter websites on the Internet, www.hj.com, and you can get some pricing information there.
What about Windows Millennium? Will the version that's currently working with Windows 98 work with Millennium?
There are telltale signs that there have been some people who've gotten early releases of Millennium and have actually tried it. There are a bunch of perhaps instability issues with Millennium. Millennium is probably not quite ready for prime time. So we've done a little bit of preliminary testing, but clearly it's several months before being released. They're continuing to make changes to IE 5.5, amongst other things, and we'll be there when it's there. Millennium is essentially, although Microsoft I'm sure would not put it this way, Windows 98 with a facelift, and preventing people from running DOS when the machine first boots. But it's essentially a continuation of the 9X operating system, whereas Windows 2000 is a continuation of the NT operating system. And although originally Windows 2000 was supposed to be what Millennium was, in other words, there was going to be a consumer edition of Windows 2000 as well, they decided probably a year ago to postpone the consumers moving to an NT environment for one more rev. So Millennium is going to be that last iteration in the 9X series.
is the goalposts keep shifting, don't they? And I guess you can never afford to relax in a job like yours, because as you say, IE 5.5 is now in beta. It seems to be a challenge for all screen readers that currently work well with IE 5.01. Whatever Microsoft has done, they've changed a few significant things. Mm-hmm. So you're already at work on that.
We are, and inevitably the work happens more as the product nears market, because it's not uncommon for new wrinkles to be thrown in at the last minute. So we don't really know that we're working until they finally, you know, cut their gold CD, and that's when we start doing our rigorous testing and our last-minute fixes to make sure it's the right stuff.
So do you have any, I guess the next major version of JFW will be 4.0, will that be right?
Or there'll be a 3.8 or whatever the marketeers decide they're going to call it. The features will most likely be similar regardless of what we call it, but it depends upon where we stage it and what the time frame is and how much the look and feel changes, probably in terms of what the numbering will be.
Are you able to whet our appetites a little as to some of the stuff that's in the melting pot at the moment?
No. In fact, we actually literally just sent 3.5 to the presses 10 days ago, 7 days ago. I lose track now. But some of us spent a very active Christmas and decided we really didn't have a social life or didn't want one either, working on the last minutes of 3.5. So at the moment, we're taking in that very short but deep breath, trying to regroup. And I mentioned we're going to have a retreat this weekend. The other thing that may likely be following that would be a couple of telephone focus groups with, you know, JFW users or potential JFW users talking about, you know, feature sets and trying to get some more details from people as to what they like about the product and some of the things they'd like to see as time progresses as well.
What's the best way for a JFW user to have input into what might be in the next release in a constructive kind of way?
Certainly writing to JAWS@HJ.com with a note laying out the feature and why you think it's appropriate, why it would help you, and or why it would help others. There was a time that that mailbox was looked at by one person, and sometimes it got into a database and sometimes it didn't, but now it's looked at by multiple people and they do get collected, and the more people who talk about an individual feature, the more it moves onto the radar, and the more we're really, you know, prone to say, ah, this isn't just one person who has an exotic application. This is really a need that's coming up in the community. So that's probably the most direct approach. A less direct approach is things like the users list. And I say less direct because we may or may not catch it. There are a bunch of us at the company who read that list and sit there quietly. And some people who don't sit there so quietly. And so we do pick up the general flow of conversations and suggestions, but it's not quite as targeted as writing to us directly.
I suppose it must be both an empowering and a frightening thing at times, perhaps, that the work that you do can really make a difference, can be the difference between whether a blind person can gain employment in a particular place of work or not, based on whether the screen reader will work with it.
I think you said both sides of the sword. It feels really good when someone is able to do well in a particular situation, and it feels not quite so good in those situations when someone is thrown at a really exotic application, and even with lots of effort and lots of customization, you know, every now and then you come up with one that just was not designed to be used by anything but someone with eyes and a mouse. You know, an application that has nothing but, you know, a couple of big bitmaps and no text and no real easy way of trying to equate locations on that bitmap with particular functions. Fortunately, that side of it tends to be happening less and less, as I think all screen readers are becoming more sophisticated. We continue to become more sophisticated and try to work in more and more different and obscure areas.
To what extent can HJ help provide an individual user with some kind of custom-made weird application in a workplace? Because, you know, it seems to me that one of the common refrains that you hear on the blindness email lists is that a lot of the so-called specialists, the professionals who are training blind people around the Western world, get to a point where, you know, they can show you around the desktop and a little bit of IE and a little bit of Word, but there aren't too many people out there who are proficient enough to, say, try and get in there under the hood and design a script for a particularly difficult application. Does HJ offer that service to a workplace or a blind person?
We do offer the service. Typically, it's done for either organizations with multiple blind users or an organization that has the funding to do customization for one person. And we will either do it on site or, in the case where we can get the application remotely, work at a distance. But that is a pay for service.
Mm. Is it reasonably expensive to do it that way?
I can't give you the exact prices because I don't have them in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essentially a consulting opportunity, just like a trainer would go out and charge for training and preparing someone for the job. This is just sort of a different level of consulting, and it's something that a lot of people who are JFW trainers are able to do on their own, and in the cases where they don't have all the knowledge, then we can try to step in and provide some of that service as well.
Do you have a view, personal or otherwise, about the success of active accessibility and what its future is likely to be?
I think for many things, active accessibility works really well. The existing version works really well, especially in areas like dialog boxes and menus and rather structured pieces of information. The current version doesn't work real well when it comes to, let's say, giving font and attribute information about characters in an editor, for instance. And Microsoft says that they're trying to address those in Active Accessibility 2.0. I've seen an initial specification, and it sounds like they're working on the right path. But time will be the judge as the new versions come out.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that there are few vendors outside of Microsoft. I can only think of one, and that would have been IBM with Lotus Notes, who've actually embraced this technology directly. I mean, there are all sorts of Microsoft-based programming languages that now have the controls done in a way that MSAA recognizes, but in terms of specific applications, the take-up's been pretty minimal, even within Microsoft itself.
That is true, and one of the things that has allowed us to get as far as we can in some of the applications we were talking about earlier, like Word and WordPerfect and other programs that have what are called object models, is we're going one level lower than MSAA and actually doing queries of those applications for specific information. MSAA at some level is really trying to provide one interface fits all. So you can always say, where's my cursor? Okay, what's the name of the thing at my cursor? What's the description? And so forth. So when it works and when it works well, it's kind of nice because you don't have to do any real customization for a particular application, because the same questions give you the proper answer regardless of where you are. When you're dealing with a program like Word or Excel or Access or PowerPoint, they all have their own object models. And you can get this information, but the way to get it is really different from one application to the next. And so a lot of the effort we've put in is really trying to dissect those applications, figure out how, in the case of a form in Microsoft Word, can we figure out where the cursor is located and what the prompt is in a respectable and reliable fashion.
One of the very positive comments about JFW since 3.31 came out is the speed with which it renders web pages into the virtual cursor. So are you using means other than active accessibility to make that happen?
We're using a little of active accessibility and a little bit of looking at the document directly.
Hmm. So that's the flexibility with which the whole sort of object model gives you within JFW.
Well, you know, everything is good for something. And to say we never use MSAA, or we never look at the underlying controls on the screen, or we never read the text, or we never use the object model, saying any of that basically means at some level we're limiting ourselves. And so we try to look at a particular problem, look at the possible solutions, and figure out what technology or what technique is going to get both the largest amount of information that a user could possibly want, and also do it in a reasonably responsive fashion. And, you know, that differs from situation to situation and application to application.
When do you think we'll see the next release of JFW, then, with a whole bunch of new features that will get us excited?
Well, Jonathan, it's been really good talking to you. I need to play politician here. We will be laying this information out over the next couple of months, and I'm sure as time progresses, announcements will make their way forward. But given the 3.5 just hit the streets, I think that the lynch mob would be out at me if I came up with any date.
Indeed.
Because we are just now getting down to laying out the feature set and determining how long pieces are going to take and so forth.
So have you ever considered running for president by any chance?
Running from president, I think, is probably safer given our current one.
There's a demo of JAWS for Windows 3.5 available on the website, right?
There is. The way it works, for those who have not downloaded it, it runs for 40 minutes whenever you run it, and then you must reboot your computer, and then you can run it again for another 40 minutes. It runs either on Windows NT or Windows 95 or Windows 98.
Does it give you a chance to sort of save things and clean up before you reboot?
It starts warning you. It says, you have 5 minutes left, you have 4 minutes left, you have 2 minutes left, you have 1 minute left, goodbye.
Yes. Does the timed authorization option still exist where you can have 60 days to try the full version?
It does. I believe it's $39.95 unless inflation has gotten ahead of me.
Right.
And that's available as well.
So
the functionality between the two of those is the same. The only difference is that the timed eval, as we're fond of calling it, you get all of the training tapes sent to you, you get the version, and it runs for 60 days, but during that 60 days there's no timeout after 40 minutes.
And I believe there are additional tutorial options besides the training tapes that are available now.
We started that about a year and a half ago, and we're actually very, very pleasantly surprised by how well they have been received. We've done them for a lot of different applications, Internet Explorer, Outlook Express. Now we're working on one for PowerPoint, Microsoft Word, and several others, all of which are available through our website. And it really is a more in-depth approach at these applications and using these applications with JFW than you might pick up by reading the help files for the individual apps. And what we try to do is take the apps as they would appear to a blind user, as opposed to sort of a more generic view, and come up with tips and hotkeys and other things that really make it easier to get particular tasks done.
And I suppose that reflects the fact that people learn in so many different ways, and that others do prefer to sit down with a tape machine and be handheld, if you will, and there's nothing wrong with that, through the process of performing routine tasks.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look, it's a pleasure to have spent this hour or so with you, and congratulations on the release of 3.5, and I hope that as the next JFW readies itself and finally gets released, that we can have a chat again and discuss what's in whatever it is called.
I'm delighted, Jonathan, and it's probably impolitique to say this, but I have always been very, very impressed with your skills as an interviewer and the amount of homework you do before the interview. And it comes through in the conversations that you have with folks. So a real pleasure.